presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Welcome in. Sun did rise today, predictably, I suppose, on the heels of the Game 7 overtime loss last night against Montreal. I'm going to put Marty on the spot right away, simply because I would struggle if you asked me this one word to describe your feeling today.
Gloomy. I was going to say doom and gloom, but that's like two words, so that's three words, actually.
Which would have been absolutely on
course,
brand.
Yes. But gloomy is what it is. I came in very early this morning in the building. I had a couple of things to do, walking around, like the cleaning crews out and, you know, some of the people you see every day. And everybody's walking their shoulders down and head down. And look, I totally understand the feeling. I'm feeling that same way. I do feel that ultimately we'll get to a point where we can look at it and say, man, this was a fun season. There's some great moments. The playoffs ride was awesome. Wish they would have done better on home ice, because the fans have been waiting for 15 years for playoff hockey and to get this building buzzing. And in the third period last night, it was going, even pregame, it was going. And it just, this kind of stinks. But yeah, gloomy this morning is for me the best approach.
The problem with age and aging is that your memory bank tends to overflow at times like this. So, as you know, there would be...
When something comes into your brain, I always believe that something else goes out. Like, your brain can only go 100%.
Yeah, presumably good memories get flushed out.
That's not good.
No, I know. That's why this show should have been done lying on a couch as opposed to sitting in these chairs. But therapy is ongoing always in an effort to get to a better place. And obviously processing this. It's impossible when you've witnessed so much of it, as I've been incredibly fortunate to do, because I've cared about this team for so long. There's just, you know, such familiarity. I mean, instantly last night, like almost instantly, it started feeling like 06 because of the puck over the glass, because we'd celebrated that team with reunion night earlier this year. Yeah. The fact that they ended up being a low penalty game and that the Habs went 1-for-1 and that ends up being a huge difference in the game. And so that, you know, there was familiarity there. There's always a familiar feel with an overtime loss. So, you know, run it back to 83 in Brad Park and 01 in this building with Kasparaitis. And then one that really hit was 1992, because just like this year, Buffalo blew out the Bruins in Game 6, 9-3, only to head on the road and lose Game 7. So, yeah, these are familiar feelings. It's what identifies you as, you know, a fan of the game, a fan of your team. But I will say this, through processing all of these memories, positive or negative, and I trust my instincts on this because, you know, I like to try to validate my thoughts with a little bit of research. I really felt this was their best opportunity to win the Stanley Cup since 1980. And that's why this stings more than the others. Going back to, and rest in peace, 12-9-25. We have talked about it over and over and over. The best team in the NHL from that time, the 07 team couldn't say that. The 06 team couldn't say that. The 99 team sure couldn't say that. They weren't even close to being the best team before getting to the final that year. The 1980 team had the best talent with the additions and with experience on their side, having lost in 75, but having the same core for largely.
And then they ran into an Islander dynasty,
by the way, that had lost in the five previous years four times in the semifinal.
Yeah.
Like,
it wasn't just winning four in a row. It was like they were good for nine years.
That's the thing. Like, I felt so impressed statistically, emotionally, by this year's team from December 9th on, because they refused to let themselves slide into bad habits for weeks at a time. And when you can say that you were the best team in the NHL over a four-month period, you should feel like, as Alex Tuch said in season, they're not just trying to make the playoffs. Yeah. The expectation is to win the Stanley Cup. That's why this stings as badly for me as it does today.
Well, the game's got to be played on the ice, but I do feel that, I mean, there's a team on the other side in the Western Conference in Colorado that is rolling really well, and Carolina's rolling well, and Buffalo maybe hasn't had the best success against the Carolina Hurricanes in, you know, I was going to say recent history, but it's been more than recent history.
At no point in the last 10 years had a team been able to say, we're the best in the NHL, we're not going to worry about not having one in Carolina.
Exactly.
That's the thing.
It doesn't, historically, it doesn't matter, right? It's about this year and whatnot. I feel like they had a chance like anything else. I think there's 16 teams that made the playoffs. There are 12 teams that go on to do media availability after the season is done. Now, there's only four teams that have kept going, that are playing, and there's a lot of disappointment. There is teams that can see their future on the upswing, and there's teams that can see their future on the downswing. I'm looking at the Sabres, and it's definitely on the upswing type of thing. And that, you know, what they were able to do this year is a really good step for what could be next year and the year after. But you can only hope, right? And it's, that's why, because next year is not given to you, and this year you were there, you were in the middle of it. So when you get to a game seven like last night, and the start is not the start you wanted, but the start doesn't matter, because in this series we've already seen the Sabres getting great starts and scoring first in game 1, 3, 4, 5, and, you know, kind of not seeing the result, and six, not seeing the results that you wanted in some of those games. So start doesn't matter. You're down to nothing. You've been battling your whole season. Your whole, think of the, I was, you know, talking to some of the fans, and they're like, ah, 2-0. I'm like, do you not remember the greatest game of the season against Tampa Bay when you thought you had a great lead and it kind of evaporated, and then you're down by 2 twice in the third period just to make a comeback and score and win it 8-7? There's always going to be opportunity. This team is going to battle till the end. And when Samuelson shot on net and it glanced off the pants of Greenway, I'm like, there you go. That's when things will open up. And to a certain extent, they did. The Sabres played better. I know a lot of people are talking today about the Malenstein put in the net goal. And look, I reviewed it multiple times. We can hear the whistle, and then we can see the puck squirted down. I would have a different view on that goal if the puck had squirted free by itself.
Which it clearly did not.
It did not. So the referee is there. The goalie makes the save. The play kind of stopped for a second. He goes to blow the whistle. Greenway gets a stick between the legs of Dobesh, where the puck was covered, and jars it loose. And the whistle obviously went, and, you know, Malenstein puts it in. I hate to say it, because obviously I'm flashing the goalie union card, and I'm like, I've been in that situation before. Third period of a game seven, the referee's always going to err on the side of an early or in a quick whistle. And if that puck had squirted free on its own, let's say it's under the arm and it goes and rolls down and Malenstein tucks it in, then I can say, okay, give, the referee should have waited a little bit. But the puck was covered, and Greenway jammed it. And while he jams it, that's when the whistle goes off, and then the puck is loose. I hate to say it, because I'm like, okay, well, that was probably the right call. And if that call had happened on Luukkonen at the other end, and if Philip Deneau jams
it, did UPL, happen on Lyon in overtime of Game 5. against Boston.
No, you're absolutely right. And at that moment, the puck was actually more free in that moment, Duffer, than anything else, because he had the pad over the top, but half the puck was there.
Yeah.
And the jam was on the, pad. But the referee at that time made that call, and the referee yesterday, Wes McCauley, made the call. And I think it was the right call. But that play alone doesn't change the game. Look, the Sabres were pushing. The Sabres had opportunity. Lindy Ruff talked after the game. He talked about, wow, he missed the net a couple of times. And I get it. Guys want to score. Dobesh was hard to beat one-on-one throughout the whole series. You had to go lateral. You had to make a move.
That's, to that point, that's why I didn't love some of their shot selection, which I think is why...
Because you're taking him on one-on-one.
Which is why I think Lindy said what he said. And whether it's a direct miss of the net or just missing an opportunity to take a better shot, I think they were kind of melded together. There were times where... And you hear it all the time, like, just get it on net. But I thought there were times they were just, because they had fallen behind early, they were a little too urgently surrendering the puck when their strength is making better plays.
And they open up the plays.
Which, to your point, gets you to the close area and maybe have movement for Dobesh.
But again, okay, so we talked about the Malenstein situation, and I'm trying to explain it, and I'm a Sabres fan, and I wanted that. I'm in the Zamboni entrance at that moment in the third period watching it. Mm-hmm. Dahlin scores. The building is erupting. I'm feeling the energy. That happens shortly after. And I was actually standing next to the standby official at the time, and I kind of gave him a look, and he's like, well, you know what that's like.
Yeah.
You've played the position. I'm like, yeah, I get it. And I'm okay with it. But again, more to the Lindy point of the shot selection, missing the net, like the mentality from the Sabres from game one was, we have to pass it around Dobesh. We have to look backdoor. Zach Benson to Josh Doan, game one, first goal of the game. Mm-hmm. That could have easily been a shot, but he goes, I freeze him, I go over to the other side. When Tage took that 2-on-1 with Benson in overtime, my thinking was, pass. As soon as he was skating up the ice, I'm like, pass. And I think that at that moment, Tage, and the competitor that he is, he wanted to make a play. He's like, I've got the puck on my stick. It's like a basketball player, right? It's like a Jordan or whatever that says, I want the ball. Did they always make the basket? No, but the best players will finish more than not, right? And he hangs onto the puck, toe drags, and then gets cut from behind and doesn't get the shot that he wants. And obviously, you look at the play again and again right now, and you're like, man, look at how far Dobesh was. Look at how wide Benson would have been open. Look at Zucker to Hellenius a couple of times, right? To like those type of plays, like even the ones that Hellenius didn't score on the first game he played, and then the one he scored on. You're like, those are the plays that were there. So I think that there's no way anybody can feel the pressure of the moment, the pressure of making the right plays, the disappointment of these players after not being able to convert and get the third goal. Mm-hmm. They're all waking up this morning extremely disappointed. Thompson is extremely disappointed, couldn't get that goal. Tuck is extremely disappointed. Dahlin, even though Dahlin scored a big goal, and even though, you know, he had a fantastic season. You wake up disappointed that you had one chance or 20 chance. Mm-hmm. You just couldn't get that third goal. And that's why it's heartbreaking for everybody and for the fans that just jumped on that wagon all year. And hopefully they jump on the wagon next year again.
Locker cleanout with media availability begins at 1, carries over into tomorrow. So we'll have lots of reaction on that front. You mentioned Hellenius, and he's heading to Switzerland now to be a part of Team Finland at the Worlds. Obviously a fine showing for Konsta over the course of the entire year with Rochester and here with the Sabres, and two stints, one in the regular season and one in the playoffs. Just to go back to some of the in-game moments and where things may have turned, and I don't expect people to, you know, look at things rationally when in the heat of the moment in a game, or whether you live every day believing that there's always going to be a good and a bad, a right and a wrong, and that kind of thing. But I will say, prior to the I don't find it controversial, but some will, the Malenstein goal, no goal that you're talking about, I felt the Sabres had already been given an enormous break less than 2 minutes earlier, when Jason Zucker was not called for blatant goaltender interference.
That was a dive on Dobesh.
Well, it also, it, whether it was or it wasn't, I've seen way less contact called a penalty. And
they, weren't calling anything anyway.
Okay, it was I'm saying
ice stick and delay a game. That's all they were going to call.
You're not, like, I know what I've seen, Marty. I've seen way less called for goalie interference. So my point is, they caught a huge break. They stayed at 5-on-5. They got the tying goal. So...
yeah.
So there.
And I mean, we could look at Jack Quinn driving the net and getting tripped a little bit. There was other things. There was too many men on the ice for Montreal that could have been called. This was one of those games where, you know, it wasn't going to be calls. There wasn't. Both teams were going to be extremely disciplined because they were getting it from their coach. There was no scrums after the whistles. There was no slashing. There was nothing. And they were going to be extremely disciplined. And the refs weren't going to call much. So you were going to get one power play on each side, and that's what you ended up getting. That was it, right? So, I mean, the calls go one way or the other. Like, I hate to look at and breaking down the goals because that's not what this is about. This is about the season, the playoffs, the whole picture, right? Again, like you're looking at The second and third period went one way, and I felt like it was in Sabres. And the fact that they couldn't finish in the third to get that third goal, as soon as they got to overtime, Montreal was a different team. Montreal got to reset in the locker room, and then all of a sudden you're like, oh, they're actually making tape-to-tape passes on breakout, and they're trying to push the envelope, and they're trying to score. And when they came up the ice on Newhook's goal, I thought the Sabres were fine. But because that second and third period, Montreal in that situation would have chipped it in the corner and gone for a change or not pushed a little bit more. So at that moment, I thought, they're fine. They're not going to try to score. They didn't try to score in the second and third period. Yeah, they had chances, but it was mostly like after the Sabres were pushing and then you get a Josh Anderson breakaway or you get something like that. It wasn't a 3-on-3 situation where they were pushing to score a goal. And then Carrier, Newhook, they're like, hey, you know what? We're a different team now in overtime. We are going to play like it's a new game. And so maybe in that whole game, the most disappointing part was the fact that they weren't able, the Sabres, to get that third goal in the third period, because as soon as they got to overtime, it resetted the clock and Montreal came out better than they did before.
Yeah, I mean, for me, I disagreed personally with what you said earlier about the start, because a game 7 start is completely, in my opinion, different than the other games.
Yes.
And especially having seen that Montreal never trailed in the previous game 7 against Tampa and just simply stayed the course, which was a lot of last night's game. And I also struggled because I'm trying to maintain our integrity on a daily basis here on this show. I struggle with commentary and belief that they were the better team for X amount of the game, because we always try to impress upon you that much of this is score effect. Mm-hmm. So when it instantly becomes 2-0 for Montreal, you would expect the other team to become the team that has more chances. And to your point, that's why it's frustrating.
Especially in a game 7.
That they didn't finish the way they did. So they never trailed in the other game 7, and they never trailed last night. And that's the thing. They couldn't get over the hurdle of a tough start. And I think that's the part that is most puzzling to me. I recognize that every game is its own entity, and there's never carryover. There's never a momentum. That's not a real thing, in my opinion. But I was disappointed with how they started last night.
Yeah.
And it just seemed like they didn't, for all the confidence that they should have had, they didn't have a crispness in moving the puck early in the game. And then that led to them being instantly behind. And then the game was played the rest of the way.
Yeah, I mean, when you look at the start, the first period in game 6, the start, the second period in game 6, right? Like scoring a minute in, 32 seconds into the first period, a minute into the second, mm-hmm. It didn't have that feel. And you're right, like Montreal had more of the shots early on. They finished the first period 11-9 on shots, although the shot attempts were more on the Sabres side. And after three periods, the Sabres had 80 shot attempts. So they were trying to shoot a lot. They were getting opportunities. Were they the best of qualities? No. At the end of the series, okay, over 7 games, mm-hmm. And I'm going to go back to say this was 11 games that those two teams have played this year. Mm-hmm. Montreal has won 6 and lost 1-7 and lost 6. No, won 6 and lost 5, sorry. Buffalo has won they're basically 5-5-1 in 11 games because that's an overtime loss. In the regular season, we'd count it as 5-5-1. Now they went 5-6. They were extremely close. In this series, the offensive zone possession time was 53 minutes to 55 minutes or so. So you're like, well, they were close in the offensive zone. The slot shots were like 106, 103. Boom, right there. The expected goals were 25 to 27. Everything was close. Mm-hmm. And really, for the first four games, didn't think that the Sabres had their game.
Right.
But also, game six kind of maybe sways that, and the fact that the Sabres scored eight and they had, like, you know, more of the offense right there, and the power play went 4-for-6, and that was good for them. But this series was extremely close.
Mm-hmm.
Game seven, overtime, it's basically a coin flip, and that's what it became. The numbers will tell you it was a coin flip. The eye test will tell you it was a coin flip, and, you know, Marty St. Louis decided to be very patient with his roster after game one and keeping the same. And Lindy Ruff was very patient until game six, you know, and then maybe a change would have been better earlier. I don't know. But at the end of the day, you got to game seven overtime and you had opportunities, and Montreal ended up with one and they put it in the back of the net. But the numbers were extremely, extremely close all across the board.
They were. And I think that's probably, you know, to even further your point about the opportunities missed in periods two and three, I really felt in the third period that for all the zone time the Sabres were having, every time Montreal got the puck, it turned into a chance the other way. And, you know, our friends at Stathletes provided their take on it and had Montreal with far more scoring chances in the third period, which I think for everybody in attendance, they, you know, you're so caught up in those sequences where you have zone time, zone time, zone time, it feels like, you know, you should be barreling through. But what I kept seeing was they better be careful here, because every time Montreal gets a look, it turns into something, and that's always the fear in overtime. And then that's exactly how it turned out. Buffalo was starting to have a little bit more zone time, and one play at the offensive blue line leads to an innocent, relatively speaking, transition, and a shot from a innocent, relatively speaking, position on the ice, the game comes to an end.
Yeah, and I know we're looking at the face-off is won, and Dahlin tries to make a play at the blue line, and he was asked about it after the game, and I think, like, he was just defeated in that position. He goes, "I can't happen." And I what I would say to Rasmus Dahlin is it's a 3-on-4.
Right.
You made a play at the blue line to try to make a play, and it's a 3-on-4. You had bodies back. You were fine.
And what percentage of time do you think he makes that same play to the positive?
Like 90%.
And I don't mean him specifically to the positive, but for the greater good
of the
team.
For the greater good and Page and whatever. And you're like, okay, that play's going to be fine. Everybody's going to be good. Even when they were in the defensive position, everybody was in the right defensive position. Mm-hmm. Dahlin's got Newhook. Byram's got, the, you know, Evans driving through. Or was it Kirby Dock? It was Evans driving through. You're looking at it all and you're like, everybody's in the right place.
Mm-hmm.
The only thing that was out of place was the puck, who found the way to the back of the net.
Right.
And really, if that shot misses the net, you know what happens? It goes by Demidov the other side. Thompson gets it.
Yeah,
and you're
but
going
then,
up the ice.
Then I'm thinking about 2011 and Vanek and Philadelphia.
Yeah.
Same type of thing.
Same type of thing.
Missed net.
But I mean, I'm looking at this and, you know, rewatching and rewatching. I'm like, it's unfortunate because these three game sevens, 97, 01, and 2026.
Mm-hmm.
3-2 overtime score at the end of the night.
Yep.
And all three of them are goals that you're like, that's the goal. Like the Derek Plant, that's the goal. The Kasparaitis, that's the goal. The Newhook, that's the goal. And I'm not looking at faulting Luukkonen on it. I the puck was on edge, and you could clearly see it dropped a little bit, and there's the net front, so whatever. But with all the other saves and all the other opportunities that Montreal had or that Buffalo had, that's the play that ends up the series in game seven overtime. Like, that's a nothing play.
Yep.
And it ends up in the back of the net. That's what's frustrating.
Yeah, that's why when we speak in percentages of, you know, I mean, it could be anything. You know, how often a team chooses to carry the puck out of the zone as opposed to stretch passes, as opposed to whatever. They're helpful in trying to determine a style of play and pressure points where teams like to attack. But obviously, any of these percentages that we speak of are not absolutes. Nothing is. And that's why at the end of the day, a goalie with an 880 save percentage can often emerge ahead of someone with a 930 save percentage because of all the other stuff that happens leading into sequences like that. I will say this, like one of the silly cliches for, you know, especially like my mom says it all the time. And I'm sure she didn't text it to me, but I know she was thinking this on Saturday. I sure hope they save some goals for Monday.
Oh, yeah.
Right? And get this. Now, in Stanley Cup playoff history, teams that allow 8 goals in game 6, or the previous game, I should say, have won 4 of the next 6 games. And it's human nature. And you see it in every sport. A blowout. Oh, they're this. And then because the games don't carry over, there's a reality. I will say this. This is why, again, I talk about the start last night. I could not have been more impressed by a team that I have already been so impressed by since December 9th than what the Sabres showed in Game 6.
Yeah.
I thought they did everything. It gets totally different. Montreal, there are nights when they choose, like last night,
like
to back
off. Game 7
off,
against Tampa.
To back off a little bit. They didn't have a choice Saturday. Buffalo was so freaking dominant in that game, and that's what I believed they would be again last night.
And this is why, look, I mean, some people like numbers, some people don't, whatnot, and that's why numbers are never absolute. Like, there's no shots that has 100% chance of going in. Even if it's an empty net and you're 2 foot away from the goal line, there's always the one time. Patrick Stefan.
Oh, and then Hemsky
scored at the end.
Yeah.
It was Patrick
Stefan. See, look at me. I was looking at the positive.
The positive. He scored at the end. But yes. But there's no shot that has 100% chance of going in. And there's also no shot on goal that has a 0% chance of going in, which, you know, we've seen with Morgan Geekie in the first round, right? And the, you know, game 2 backhand or whatnot.
Yep.
So that's why numbers are never absolute. And that's why a play like Newhook going in and taking that shot is often a better play than, you know, just trying to make something out of nothing and not getting a shot on that. That whole Wayne Gretzky quote, right? You miss, you don't score on 100% of the shots you don't take. Like, that's the only absolute, is if you don't take the shot, you're not going to score.
Unless you're Nick Baptiste, who got his first NHL goal with Buffalo.
That's happened a few times. Again, it's never absolute.
It's never absolute. What's your biggest takeaway from this season? Something you're most proud of? We're taking your responses on social at Sabres Live, and we'll dive into those when we come back.
Back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Dude, with it being so fresh, it's just difficult to check here, just to think of, you know, this series and how everything just went.
It's tough. It stings. Thought we played hard all year to get to this point. I don't think anyone in this room felt like we were done yet. Just disappointed. It sucks.
In this game, you came back from 2 goals down and certainly had a lot of great opportunities. It really seemed like starting the second period, you guys really kicked it into gear. Did you feel that way?
Yeah, I mean, I thought we played a really good game, which makes it even tougher of a, you know, taste. Had a lot of chances. Whoopi played great. You know, keeps it tight for us and claw our way back into it and felt like we had all the momentum. Just couldn't score. Really thought that was gonna end different.
You look around this room and the intermission going at overtime, you almost picturing who's gonna be a hero the way the game had gone the previous 30 minutes.
Yeah, we were feeling good in here. Tons of confidence in this room. And I think everyone in here felt like this was going to end different and probably felt like we deserved a little better outcome. But it's the way it goes sometimes. And yeah, I just gotta unfortunately take that that taste with us into the summer and do something about it.
Still in the emotionally processing phase here on the heels of last night's Game 7 overtime loss to Montreal. There will be endless days where we can talk about who's next to come in and help, who is likely to leave, because there will always be players that come and go. That's what makes every season unique in its own way. You never have top to bottom, especially when you consider all the players that join in season for injuries and other reasons to round out what turns out, you know, going from a 23-man roster to a 33 to a 35-man roster. That's just the nature of it, and you'll never have it exactly the same year after year. So we've got lots of days ahead. Locker clean out this afternoon, tomorrow, and on it goes when eventually hearing from the general manager and the coach. But we're taking your reactions today, too, at Sabres Live. And, you know, it's really just the one of many opportunities for people to continue expressing what they took away from this season.
And obviously, as you may not expect, because usually social media comments are never like all that positive, but it's all positive
this
morning.
Well, producer Sam, like, has... He's kind of mastered the use of social media, so his way of wording questions solicits and invites only positive responses. I don't know if you knew that. So,
well, yeah, because he said, what's your biggest takeaway from the season? But then he added, what are you most proud of?
It was as if you wrote the tweet because there were two questions instead of one.
But at the same time, it's telling you, like, making your brain go to the positive situation. But, I mean, we're getting from Pluckett's in... Their hard-working, never-give-up attitude and how they battled for each other. They are what our teammates should be. That's great. Jacob says, proud of the way they became a bona fide team, not just a bunch of guys with the same jersey. So that's the consensus of what they're getting, right?
That's a great way to put it.
How they fought and how they battled all season long. Jake said that. Alex says, just how much fun this team was. They all fought for each other. Matt says the resilience they developed. Hank says the vitality this team has brought back to the city. The Sabres at downtown buzzing again. Like, they're all valid point, right?
Yeah, and they're not just...
Kathy says she's forever a Sabres fan. Through thick and thin, our young men became a team this year. Thank you, Sabres, with the emojis. So that was great, too.
It probably goes without saying, but... Because it had been so long, there wasn't much development around here the last time the Sabres were in the playoffs.
No.
And the few businesses, especially restaurants, that had stayed committed and invested down here, finally had an opportunity to feel what they hoped, wanted, expected they would have felt before. And... You're looking at your phone on a platform that really wasn't that popular the last time the Sabres were in the postseason. People were not live tweeting everything from NHL arenas at that point in time.
Yeah, like, it was a different...
It's a different time. So,
I love how everybody embraced it from the Blade Gang early in round one to everything. The Beer Saber yesterday, I mean... there was 10,000 Beer Sabres available, and all of them went. And it's not that people that came to the game can say, oh, I didn't get one. You know, anybody that wanted one could get one because it took some time to sell them out. And the lines were, you would wait 15, 20 minutes to get one. And they were affordable, and everybody that wanted one could go and get one, and everybody loved it. That was a rally cry at one point in the game with the Beer Saber. Tim Harris says something really cool. 8 points back of Tampa after the Olympics and still win the Atlantic. Like, when you look at December 9th, 10 games in a row, and then they lose to Columbus, and then you're like, oh, let's see how this team's going to respond. And then they responded. And then they lose a bad one to Pittsburgh before going to Olympic break. And Alex Lyon says, I hope this leaves a bitter taste in our mouth. And they come back and win the game in New Jersey where Tage Thompson and Jack Hughes are being showcased to the crowd, coming back gold medalists from the Olympics. And the Sabres find another gear and keep playing. You mentioned game six, how they responded. The Sabres did at the start of game six after game five. Like, there's been so much of that response that was good this year. Would we have liked a better response in game seven? Yeah, but the hockey sports isn't perfect. Like, you can't go from the drop of the puck to the end of the game and say it was perfect. It's never going to be. But you look for the majority of the game, the Sabres at least gave you that feeling that at any moment they could win the game. It wasn't a, oh, they lost 6-1, they got blown out of the building. It was there. Mm-hmm. And that's what was so much fun. I think that's the feeling from everybody around. And I have to also say, because I remember in 2006, you know, the run to the conference finals, the parties in the plaza, and the young people that were there back then, because it was 98 conference finals, 99 finals. There was 0-1 second round where we thought maybe game six we were going to win, and they're playing Pittsburgh, Mario, and Straka and Oti and Kasparaitis and Oti. But there was that buzz that kept going. Then there was a lockout, but still. Now, seeing like these young high schoolers and college people out in the plaza, out in the Sabre
Club
party.
Say it. Our kids.
Our kids are there, yeah. I mean, last night, I mean, I'm like texting my 18-year-old daughter who's outside. I'm like, just, you know, be safe, be careful, depending on how this goes. You know, either way. And everybody was great. Everybody walked out at the end. She said it was so such a bummer at the end. You know, everybody's so intense. The goals are happening in the third period, blah, blah, blah. Overtime, and then it's like everybody was like, oh man, and then they all walked, and it was like as much as you can think of, like, civilized and embraced, and it was definitely a great thing to happen for this generation of young people that finally have gotten the taste of it.
It's literally why the word unity exists within the word community.
Yeah,
you feel it in the worst moments, walking out of being inside the arena or in the Canalside case, you're in it together. And that's why you, should always try to turn your attention to lean on people that are trying and remaining level-headed, you know. And as a group, you just try to, you know, quote-unquote, get through it together. That's why sports mirrors life. And that's how and where you can take examples from to be just better across the board, you know, like, and does it come with a lot of pain? 100%.
Yes.
But, you know, like, just, you know, Steve chiming in, younger guys showed a lot of promise for the future. They've been able to develop properly, and it shows in their play at the NHL level. Just think about that for a second. Mm-hmm. The younger guys showed a lot of promise for the future. They've been able to develop properly, and it shows in their play at the NHL level. Do you know how many times in October and November we were still seeing people blame the organization for Zach Benson's development? That he was rushed into the NHL. First
or
of all,
Yuri Kulik.
Yeah, and then Yuri's health issues obviously completely changed.
But you saw a player in Yuri Kulik, right, and then Noah Ostlund.
This is why I don't like speaking in absolutes, like a statement like that. Oh, this team has done this poorly. Yeah. And it takes a team to show you the best in each of its individuals. That's why you have, unfortunately, the Alex Newhooks of the world emerging as a Game 7 hero in consecutive series because of all the work of all the other teammates and the goaltender. So I think we are so close to this, and we've obviously... And you can go back to Jack and Sam and any other top picks, prospects that have come through the last decade. It's never just about them. And even if one or two don't pan out, it's not an organizational failure. It becomes a situational disappointment is what happens. Is when you don't get, I say this all the time, just give me a player that I know what to expect. Good hockey IQ,
hard worker,
consistent statistics through the course of their career, right? Mm-hmm. Like when Ray Ferraro said yesterday, I see Benson as a 25-goal, 70-point guy moving forward. Great. Amazing. Think about it in your mind when you're building your team. I can count on this, right? And so sometimes, just by circumstance, you come into a situation, you have some vets that aren't playing well, they get moved out, the situation changes completely. Mm-hmm. From what it looked like when you were entering into the team or into the league. And I just think this point made by Steve, there is so much to like and appreciate with the development of Benson, Ostlund, Helenius. I believe Jiří Kulík will still fit that profile when healthy. Yeah. Like,
what about the leaps and bounds, like, forward of Matias Samuelsson this year?
Oh, my goodness. And, he's the poster boy for all of this.
And
what
Bo
changed?
Byram,
what changed? He stayed healthy.
He stayed healthy.
Right? And that's how you measure someone's consistency. Give me the proper sample size, and guess what? Defensemen like Samuelsson inevitably are going to miss 10 to 15 games a year. It almost always happens because of the nature of the sport. You're going to break a finger, or you're going to crack a bone in your ankle, and you're going to have to sit on the sidelines for 2 to 4 weeks. So you miss a chunk of games, but largely, you know, and that didn't, Samuelsson was even more healthy than that. Yeah. But the point is, it's, you know, try to get to a position where you can truly evaluate a healthy player.
So when you look at those young guys, though, and I'm looking at this experience this year, and I know it's hard to say, oh, great experience this year. This team is going to use this, because you don't know what next year is going to be, and you don't know what the next 10 years are going to be. But there's the thing. On April the 15th, the Sabres played their last regular season game against the Dallas Stars. Mm-hmm. Okay? Today, we are May the 19th. It has been a month. Okay? You're barely, for Montreal and Carolina and Colorado, you're barely halfway there. The hardest part of it all is the next month. Mm-hmm. And I've experienced missing the playoffs, losing first round, winning first round, losing second round, losing conference finals, winning the conference final, getting to the finals. I've experienced all the levels, but winning the cup. And yes, Black Aces in 99, but I was doing, you know, the same path in the AHL and whatnot. And all I can remember is, especially when I lost after the second round or after the conference final, thinking, man, there is even more that the next teams have to go through. Mm-hmm. That is a lesson that I hope everybody learns, knowing that there's even more road that they have to get to.
Really quick, Julie's words to break. Proud of this team for playing for each other and making it exciting. I loved being able to show my best friend what real Buffalo hockey feels like.
Yes.
So grateful to have been a part of it. We're back after this on Sabres Live.
We're back with more of Sabres Live, presented by Seneca Resorts and Casinos. Nothing else comes close.
Thanks for all the input on social at Sabres Live. M. Sinclair says Owen Power showing the hockey world why he was a number one pick by never causing damage to the team with only 16 penalty minutes over the entire season. Certainly a great assessment there. Michael says, I've been through a lot on the Buffalo sports drought, and this one, although heartbreaking, is special for me that I get to go through this with my son and let him experience what good sports in Buffalo sports are all about.
Yeah, and I think that's another thing, right? Like, the community you mentioned before, and the parents are in the building. I was in the Zamboni entrance for the third period yesterday, and, you know, there's these single row of seats right mm-hmm. next to the Zamboni, like, going yep. in. And there was a man there with I assume a father, with a probably 2 or 3 months old in his arms, sitting throughout the whole third period in overtime with the diaper bag, and he's sitting in one seat. Like, this is like you getting a seat for the 97, game 7 against Ottawa, and there's a single seat, I'm taking it, but I have a baby and I gotta go to it or whatever. I mean that was very heartwarming and kind of like cool to see at the same time.
Yeah, a lot of people expressing their pride, certainly, with the ability to battle from where they were to get an opportunity to say they were Atlantic Division champs in the regular season. Obviously, now they'll watch the remaining teams in the conference finals that are about to start tomorrow. Vegas, by the way, lost their appeal after shunning the media after their last series win, so they will lose a second-round pick coming up here and $100,000. I'm not sure either of them matter to Vegas. That's why they act the way they do in the first place. Shayna Goldman is on the show tomorrow.
Yeah, and Carolina is a favored, and Colorado is a favored. They're both at -285 to win the series. So there's not a clear favorite.
Stay with Sabres socials and Sabres.com, and us at Sabres Live tomorrow for Locker Cleanout Reaction. See you soon.